I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America. My guest at this time is Amy Ridenour. She is the chairwoman for the National Center for Public Policy Research. She has studied and written extensively on the Health and Human Services contraception mandate, which is, of course, a major and controversial part of the new health care law and was argued very recently before the U.S. Supreme Court. But in one of her latest writings, Amy contends that in addition to the birth control debate that's playing out right now, there's a much deeper and more secretive agenda that the contraception mandate is part of. And Amy, thanks so much for being with us.
Glad to be with you, Greg.
You've spent a lot of time poring through the Federal Register, which is obviously pretty tedious work, but what did you discover there?
Well, what I discovered is that while the president went out in the East Room and gave a speech saying that the purpose of the HHS mandate is to help lower income people afford birth control, or lower income women, actually, in the HHS documents themselves, they talk about something else entirely, and that is that the purpose of the mandate is to reduce economic and social disparities between men and women.
And it's not just related to the contraception, or is it?
Well, that's the funny thing. When you read the Federal Register, and this, of course, is the document that the HHS used to publish the regulation. So this is an official legal document. They do not talk about the need to help lower income people afford birth control. They do not say things like birth control may only be $9 a month, but if you make $9 an hour, that's a lot of money. No, what they talk about over and over and over again is gender disparity. It sounds like a women's studies class. What they emphasize is that, in their view, women make less money than men, and women get promoted less money than men. Again, that's their view. And they see the HHS mandate is as a way to change that.
And from what you've discovered, there is no corresponding benefit for men when it comes to contraceptives or even vasectomy surgery and that sort of thing in order to help with family planning, correct?
Well, exactly. I mean, if my theory is wrong, and of course they've written it in plain English, so it's unlikely to be wrong, then it's very difficult to explain why you would have a quote-unquote birth control mandate, and it does include some early abortion drugs and devices, but why you would have such a thing only for women. Because while it is true that only women can get pregnant, it is not the case that only women can use birth control or only women can get sterilized. A woman who wants her pill covered by her insurance under the mandate, 100% covered, no copay. Man wants condoms covered, forget about it. Similarly, tubal ligation, which is the sterilization procedure for women, 100% covered, no copay by law. Men, opposite. Vasectomies, not covered, not even one penny.
And it doesn't matter your income level whatsoever. It's just women covered, men not, correct?
Exactly, yeah. A billionaire woman would be covered, and a very, very poor man would not be covered. Income has absolutely nothing to do with this. Gender, and frankly, feminism, has everything to do with it.
Any clues inside the Federal Register papers that you looked at as to what the end game is here and other aspects of it in addition to what we've seen in the mandate itself?
Well, what I think we're seeing here is the feminist agenda that has been taught in public universities and private universities for decades now, which has the bizarre theory that the United States and other Western cultures are patriarchal, that they are oppressive to women, that the family is oppressive to women, that if you are a woman in a family and you think you are happily married and you think you are happy being a mom, you aren't actually. You just don't realize that you are being oppressed. The end game here is a social reorganization of society. The end game is to change the way we think about how we live. It is to change Western culture. That's the big end game. Now, a secondary and not insignificant end game is the balkanization of society, men versus women, so then a certain political party or political interests can approach women and say, look, we're your champions. You were oppressed. There's a war on women. We are your rescuers. And their goal, of course, is to get votes.
We've obviously seen different electoral strategies just very recently in terms of appealing directly to women, appealing directly to the poor and so forth. And so there's obviously that political aspect to it. Any other idea what specific issues they're likely to target in order to try and drive this wedge further, as you allege?
Well, I don't know where they'll go next. Frankly, I was surprised when I read the Federal Register, because the president has gone out numerous times and said that it's necessary for the public, frankly, it's the employers, to provide health birth control for women, because half of all women, in his view, under 35, have struggled to pay for birth control. That's his word, struggled. I don't believe that statistic, but nevertheless, that's the reason he gave. So when I looked at the documents and saw that they didn't ever mention lack of income as an issue, but only mentioned gender disparity, my guess is that wherever, for this group of people at least, wherever the women's studies courses choose to go in the future is where they will happily follow.
Amy, you've discovered this now. You're obviously trying to make sure as many people as possible know about this. What's your message to folks as you reveal this? What should be their response? What should be their intuition as they hear this strategy from this administration?
What I think people need to be doing is making sure their member of Congress knows about this, and making sure whatever their thoughts and feelings are about this, that they communicate them. There's a lot of reasons, in my opinion, to be opposed to the HHS mandate. The federal government doesn't have this authority. It is unconstitutional. It violates the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. It's unfair to people of conscience, whether it's religious conscience or otherwise. And also, it's unfair to workers because it is forcing them to take a certain percentage of their pay in birth control, whether they want it or not. And frankly, most people would just as soon have cash. That said, we need to keep in mind that this is a basic inequity. It is ridiculous for the federal government to impose a mandate that helps one gender against another. And that's, honest to goodness, what it is. We should not be dividing Americans against other Americans. Certainly not spouses, dividing spouses among spouses. But it's not the function of government to divide us. And that message has to get to Washington.
Last question real quickly. You obviously followed the Supreme Court arguments from last week. A lot of folks offering predictions, but we know when it comes to Obamacare, reading the Supreme Court oral arguments is not necessarily a good bet. But what's your takeaway from that? What do you think we'll see in June?
I think we're going to see a 5-4 decision in favor of Hobby Lobby and Conestoga Wood. I think Justice Kennedy will go with Hobby Lobby. Justice Roberts will stay on the reservation this time, and we will probably see four of the so-called liberals. However, I would not be overwhelmingly shocked to see Justice Breyer also vote with the majority.
Certainly be watching that aspect of this debate, and certainly be tracking the reaction to what you've uncovered here. Amy, thanks very much for your time.
Glad to do it, Greg.
Amy Ridenour is chairwoman of the National Center for Public Policy Research. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.